Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
She decided to punch me in the tit. That was a traumatizing experience for me. I don't know why I've included that part of the match. But I guess if I have to have all of it, I have to have that bit.
What three wrestling matches would you watch if you were stranded on a desert island? This is what I'm asking wrestling's best. In the ring, around the ring, behind the scenes, or behind a microphone. I'm Tom Campbell. Thank you for joining me on Cultaholic Island for another episode of Desert Island Graps.
Hailing from Belfast, Northern Ireland, the leader of the uprising and the reigning and defending three-time Eve champion, this is the Fighting Irish, Rhea O'Reilly.
The Fighting Irish doesn't need any introduction. I am the most dominant champion in pro wrestling Eve history.
Go for another one! Let's go!
I'll be honest, I don't believe a single person up in that locker room currently deserves a shot at my title.
Rhea O'Reilly, how are you doing?
I'm not too bad. I'm glad we are finally able to actually record this podcast, Tom, because we were meant to do it a few weeks ago.
The greatest excuse I've ever had for somebody unable to make it to a Desert Island Graps recording was, I have lost my voice at the theme park.
Yes, I did. I had to message you and be like, I need to warn you, I might not be able to record as I've lost my voice through screaming on roller coasters. It was so cathartic. I love roller coasters anyway. It's always fun. But I think I was just letting out, you know, the internal of everything we've been experiencing over the last few months.
Can you remember? Because I always find whenever I lose my voice, there is a particular moment almost where you feel the doing of the vocal cord. Is there a particular ride where you went, I've buggered it here, I've lost my voice?
You know what? No. I had the best time. I was just going on everything, screaming my lungs out, totally normal. It wasn't until the next morning I woke up and like said something out loud and nothing came out. I was like, oh, oopsies. That's it. But I was like, it was worth it. It's fine.
What's a dream roller coaster ride for Rhea O'Reilly?
I love a lot of roller coasters. I've still never been on a wooden roller coaster, and that is definitely like on my bucket list. Some of my favorites. I love the Aerosmith roller coaster at Disneyland Paris. It's really great. I love the Hulk at Universal in Florida. And I think my favorite at Thorpe Park is, it's either Nemesis Inferno or Colossus. It's the old school ones. Now, I've never been to Alton Towers, so that is also on my to-do list for this year. You know, I've only been in England for like 12 years, so it's about time I got there. I am ready to conquer more of the UK's great roller coasters.
Would you like to think of yourself as a bit of a theme park junkie, or is this just a thing?
Absolutely. I absolutely love them. I try to go to them any which way I can, any trips I can go on. I love the feeling and I love roller coasters, and I also love any kind of ride that spins you around. The only ones I don't really like are those ones where you go up and then you drop back down. But no, which is ridiculous because I do hate those rides. However, my favorite Disney ride is Tower of Terror, which is a vertical drop ride. So it makes no sense. It's not logical. But any other vertical drop ride apart from Tower of Terror is my worst ride ever.
We're sending you onto a desert island, Rhea.
Set the scene. Tell me about the desert island.
It is a crisp evening in the middle of summertime. You stare out at the Atlantic Ocean. You have swathes of beautiful golden sand at your feet.
Lovely.
Sometimes some crabs. Watch out for them. And as you watch the sun go down, to your left you have a crackling campfire. There was an arsehole that played the guitar, but we've eaten him by this point.
Fantastic. Good. Yeah.
To the right, you have conveniently set up a classic television DVD combo from off of the noughties. And we have given you to put into said TV DVD combo a burnable DVD containing three wrestling matches that you would love to watch whilst you are stranded on a desert island. And it is up to you to decide what three matches go onto said DVD. So, Rhea, what would you like your first wrestling match to be?
Oh, this is very exciting. Yeah. Just to let you know, I have cut down a coconut, I have chopped it in half, and I have brewed my own form of interesting alcoholic beverage to make a desert island cocktail.
Have you put a curly straw into said coconut?
No, but it does have one of those little paper umbrellas.
Excellent. That's
yes,
fine.
I take them everywhere. I always have one with me just in case. Island.
Just in case you need a pint of lager jazzing up.
Well, that's true, yeah. You know, but especially, you know, in case I'm on a desert island where I'm sitting down to relax and watch some wrestling. But yes, back to the DVD. My first match, I've gone with one of my favourite matches I've ever experienced live. So that's the one I went with. And it is from WrestleMania 25, which was the first WrestleMania I went to. And it was Undertaker versus Shawn Michaels.
Now, before we get into the match itself, this was the first WrestleMania, as you say, that you attended live. Can you talk us through arriving at the venue and the feeling that you had being a part of WrestleMania for the first time?
Oh my goodness, it was absolutely amazing. So it was really special as well because it was just after I had started sort of my wrestling training. I'd been up to Lance Storm School in Canada. I trained. I'd come home. I'd started doing some training here in the UK. You know, I was really starting to make like becoming a wrestler a reality. And then I was off to WrestleMania. So it was so exciting. And it wasn't just that event, but the whole weekend. You know, I did Access. I went to indie wrestling shows. There wasn't quite the like whole like WrestleCon and WWN experience then, but like I saw two Ring of Honor shows and it was absolutely amazing. And then when I got to the venue, I have never been in a venue that big in my entire life. And I could not comprehend, my tiny brain could not comprehend this many people in one place for anything. Never mind coming to see people pretending to fight. And it was absolutely amazing.
Is there a moment that stands out to you that just took your breath away?
Well, I'm very lucky that I did see The Undertaker live a couple of times before this had happened. So I knew what I was in for as soon as the dung hit. I swear, the second that noise hit, the atmosphere in the entire stadium just completely changed. It was like there was electricity coursing through the building. It was like amazing. Like thinking about it, I still get goosebumps, and it was like, what, over 10 years ago. So just from the moment that happened, the hype video, I never ever forget the line that it like finished with, which was the Undertaker going to Shawn Michaels, "It can be hell getting into heaven." And I was just like, yes, I'm so excited. I think WWE do those hype videos so well. So from the moment that entrance happened, I was like, I know this is going to be sick. This is going to be absolutely amazing. And I genuinely was convinced that the streak might be ending. and I was going to be there, and it was going to be like mind blowing. So I was so on the edge of my seat before they even did anything, before the bell even rang. I was like, so yeah, to say I was excited is an understatement.
Is there something from that match that maybe you missed live that when you watched it again, you appreciated?
The whole match is so great. I think one of the things in it, like, they just, you can tell that they want to beat each other from the moment that the bell rings and they start. This isn't about having like the most technical match or, you know, showing off like spots that are going to be like gift forever. It was like, I want to beat you. And that, it was, that made it so exciting. You know, from the outset, it was just, you could feel that there was that real competitive edge. It was exciting. There are things that I think I remember distinctly. The Undertaker does a dive in this match where I thought he was going to die. So he does a dive, and I have watched it back since. And yeah, he dives out of the ring and somehow ends up completely vertical, head first for the floor. And you're just like, you're a tall man. He dives over the top rope, and then it's like, I don't know, he has this perfect trajectory, and for all of us, for some bizarre reason, his whole body just rotates by 90 degrees, and you're like, no. And if you ever watch this match back, like on the network, they replay it so many times, and it's just, it feels more gross to watch it every single time. but the defining moment for me that just like sold the whole match and again made me go, the streak's gonna end, is when Undertaker, he hits that first tombstone on Shawn Michaels, and Shawn Michaels kicks out, and the Undertaker's face, it's just complete disbelief. He cannot believe this has happened. He cannot believe it. I mean, he's already done like a million moves to Shawn Michaels, and at this point it's like he can't even understand what's going on and why he hasn't just won. And in that moment I was like, the streak's gonna end. And yeah, it's just so smart. And the like sort of back and forth with the moves is just perfect. Sometimes, you know, matches, they just have like too much, or that like end sequence just goes on and on and on, and it can be exciting and it can keep you like suspenseful, but like I think they hit it on the head for me. It was the perfect length, the perfect sort of tease of the finish. Yeah, love it.
This was a show that dates back to 2009. At that point, sort of, Pro Wrestling Eve wasn't even a thing. And you, am I right in thinking that we were still at a point where you hadn't officially debuted yet?
No, I hadn't even had my first like match on a trainee show or anything at this point. So I was still definitely a total trainee when I went to this show.
How long were you a wrestling fan before the penny dropped and you went, this is what I want to do for a career, for a thing?
Gosh, well, I came to wrestling like a little bit later. I didn't watch it when I was a kid. It was when I was in secondary school. I started watching wrestling. I think I was around like Anna. And, you know, I loved it. I'd never seen anything like it. And I loved the physicality of it. I love the theatrics of it. I just the characters, and just I fell in love with wrestling pretty much straight away. And I did all those sort of like things that you do as a teenager, like I was in an e-fed, which I don't think those exist anymore. I don't know, there's probably different versions of that, but you know, it was like role-playing wrestlers in Yahoo groups.
I remember this. No, I was familiar with this. So when you e-fed it, we've got to dig into this. We've got to deep dive into this. Who was your character in the e-fed?
So me and my best friend and wrestling friend, we were huge fans of DX. So we loved the New Age Outlaws, and we decided we wanted to be a tag team. So we were Street Puppy, which was me, and Miss Ass, which was her. Yes, we went there.
Street puppy
instead of Road Dog.
Amazing.
So I was Street Puppy and she was Miss Ass, and we were the cool age outlaws.
I love it.
True story.
Who was writing the promos for the e-fed?
Oh, I think, you know, do you know what? I think we did a good combo. It was a lot of collaborative work. And, you know, I had a long career. It was going well. Unfortunately, Miss S did retire long before Street Puppy. Street Puppy went on to have an illustrious career until I was in an electric steel cage match and got electrocuted to death. And that was the end of my EFED career.
Are you still in contact with Miss Ass?
No, sadly. Our lives have just diverged. When I moved to England, we kind of lost touch. But, you know, Miss Ass, if you're out there, feel free to get in touch. Let's have a reunion.
We are looking for Miss Ass today on Desert Island Graphs. Please reach out. Who was it that... Was there someone before Miss Ass that got you into wrestling? Can you remember the first time that you watched it?
It was around her house, actually. The first time I saw wrestling, I'm gonna guess it was like a Sunday Night Heat or something like that. And the first wrestlers I saw were The Brood, and I loved vampires, so I was like, this is awesome. And Edge was the tallest, so he was my favorite, and that's why I picked him. So yeah, those were their first wrestlers. I was really into The Brood. I thought they were so cool. Even though I wasn't really a goth, but I was rocking that vampire vibe, so it was I enjoyed it. So I was really, really into them, and I didn't really pay attention to like women in wrestling too much until Trish Stratus came along, and I hated her so much that it made me love women in wrestling, because she was the first, this sounds odd, but she was the first woman that made me feel like that huge emotional, passionate connection that I'd had, you know, with male wrestlers where I loved them and I hated them and whatever, but I never experienced that with a woman until Trish came along. And when I saw, when she was managing at TNA and they feuded with the Dudleys and she went through a table, that was the pinnacle moment where I went, maybe I want to be involved in wrestling. I don't know if I wanted to be a wrestler right then, but I saw that there was a place for women to create the same sort of buzz and excitement and moments in wrestling that men could.
There was consideration for you becoming a vet, wasn't there? Was there anything else besides maybe wanting to be a vet that you wanted to pursue as a career?
I don't know. Do you know, it's really weird. When I look back at it, I don't really remember much. I did a lot of drama when I was younger, and I think I never thought about doing it as a career, because every TV show and movie where someone wants to be an actor, they're just a waiting staff. And so I just was like, oh, I don't really want to do that. So I don't know. I never really had a big career plan. I mean, when I was at school, I told, like, we didn't really have like career sessions and stuff, but I did say, you know, oh, I want to be a wrestler, and they just laughed at me, so that wasn't something they were going to help me pursue as such. But I went to university to do like psychology, and I was really interested in like criminal and forensic psychology, and mostly because I love like crime TV and books, which probably isn't the best basis for a career, but I thought it was interesting. And so I went and did that, and absolutely loved it. And it's something, you know, who knows, maybe I will explore further down the line, because it's like an area that still fascinates me. But you know, you always just hold on to that dream job, you know. You know, I want to be a rock star, a movie star. I want to be a professional wrestler.
Is there any time where this sort of passion for forensic psychology and the like has sort of bled into your wrestling life or a wrestling persona or an element of what you do in the ring?
I think like studying psychology is always interesting, because I think when you study people, you have a better understanding of how to influence people, maybe. And honing in on like knowing how to make people feel things, and that doesn't just come from psychology. I think it sounds silly, but no joke, like I watch a horrendous amount of TV and film, and I definitely think that really helps with wrestling, because I feel like you develop a really good understanding of like a story and narrative and how you can take people on those journeys. And I've certainly pulled sort of little bits and pieces over the years from different things that have I've sort of maybe inspired character, but just also inspired like story arcs over time as well.
What's the most interesting thing you learned in your first few months of psychology?
Oh, I mean, I think a lot of stuff, though, you learn over the time. And, you know, it's something I haven't like disappeared from, like learning from. Like I'm forever reading articles about stuff now. But like, I think anyone who does a psychology degree, especially when you start going into like psychological disorders, you diagnose yourself with almost all of them, which is probably not a good thing. But I think like what is interesting is that you really do get an appreciation for the fact that like we're all unique, but we're all human. And so we all come from sort of those same base places. Most of us, at least, have sort of those base desires, needs, wants. And then sort of they're fine tuned by the experiences that we have over life. It's really interesting. It is interesting. You said you talked about evil, because you know we did a whole module and it was about nature nurture and you know the discussions about these things that seemed so futuristic but were happening, where they were piloting studies where they were like you were looking at families in like council estates that had like the rural criminals, for example, and we're like, do we take these children away as soon as they're born? Because otherwise they're going to become criminals, and it's nature nurture and all this kind of stuff. And you're like, you can't predict someone's future based on their genetics, or can you? And I could talk about all these things all day. It was very fascinating. But I think like especially when it comes to like when you're looking at like crime and stuff like that is, you know, without getting too serious, wow, this Desert Island talk's got very serious very quick.
It does happen from time to time.
Yeah, is like, you know, I think like ex-offenders, so people have left prison, are some of like the people that struggle the most in society. But we have a prison system because we, you know, believe that, you know, people do their time and they come out, but that's not necessarily how we treat those people. And it's like, well, if you don't believe in reform, then why do we even have it? And it's like a really interesting conversation to have.
The idea that simply putting somebody at its absolute bare bones, the idea of putting somebody in a cell for 6 months to think about what they did, doesn't necessarily make them realize what they did was essentially wrong, because a lot of the times things like that come from a place of they don't understand why it's wrong.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that like there are definite serious issues sort of with the prison system in this country. And, you know, I've done volunteer work with people in prison, and it's really interesting. So if you look at somewhere like Norway's a really good example, their prison system is completely different. And it's definitely like you go in there to become a better person and come out, and their like reoffending rates are like some of the lowest in the world, where, you know, we take a prison system like we have or like America has, and reoffending rates are like through the roof. So it's just, you know, there's definitely something there that I feel like needs to change. I don't know, like there's so many things that I feel our country is a little bit broken at times. There's so much stuff we need to work on, but yeah, I definitely think, you know, like if you either believe in reform or you don't, and if you do, then your prison system has to reflect that.
Out of interest, what is it that the Norway system does that leads them to such great results?
Well, there's a lot of stuff they do. Like, it's a lot freer. There's a lot of moving around. They have and I mean, I don't have like all the details though, but like they have a more like sense of community within the prison as well. And they are, you know, very strong on doing courses and things like that. Within their prisons as well. So like one thing that is quite tricky here is they used to have these sentences here where you had to complete, you didn't have a time on your sentence, but you had to complete certain courses to leave, but not all prisons would run them. So then you'd have to try and transfer to another prison, but in the time that you apply for your transfer and the time you get there, they might not even be running that course anymore. And then you have to, and so people were spending like ridiculous amounts of time in prison when probably actually they didn't need to be there, but they were just trying to chase these courses that were on their mandatory list but weren't available to them. And that blew my mind. I'm like, how can you set someone impossible requirements to move on? Like, crazy. But yeah, I mean, if anyone's interested in this stuff, like, go and look at like Norway's system. It's really interesting. Here on the desert island, though, we just don't have a prison because I am the law.
You made a decision to go with your instinct a little bit and decide that, you know what, this wrestling thing, I've just seen a lady go through a table who deserved yeah. it, who properly deserved it. I'd like to pursue this even more. You ended up going via the Storm Wrestling Academy. Where did you first hear about the Storm Wrestling Academy?
Well, the wondrous internet. Yes, I had actually originally had plans to go train with the Hearts. But unfortunately, by the time I was getting ready to go, they weren't there anymore. So, which was really disappointing. And then I kind of went, oh, well, I guess I'm not meant to be a wrestler. And then I went, hold a minute. I can use my dial-up internet to find somewhere else to train. So I basically went online and literally typed in like wrestling training schools and got a lot of, lots of different like sort of very, you know, basic websites coming up, lots of different schools. And I just like, I looked through loads of them and kind of tried to find anything that anyone had written about training, any of them. Which, I mean, the internet is full of information about this stuff now. Going back then, like, it was still forming and building those opinions on wrestling schools. A lot of them were quite new then. But so I was just looking around, and then, I don't know, I saw Lance's school. I saw it was, you know, it was in Canada, which is where I'd wanted to go train anyway. I always thought he was, a fantastic wrestler. And I just... After, you know, I looked through a bunch of schools, I just went, for some reason, sometimes it's, again, it was the gut. My gut feeling was like, this is where I'm supposed to go. So I popped him an email and said, hey, I want to come train. And he said, yes. And then I just quit my job, told my landlord I was leaving, put all my stuff in storage, and I hopped on a plane.
That's an amazing commitment to a dream. To have that one email conversation with Lance Storm and just go, I'm leaving my job, I'm leaving my flat, into storage all my stuff goes, away I go. Was there ever any moment in those sort of final weeks before you left that you had any trepidation about your move?
Oh, I mean, absolutely. I was like, what am I doing? Like, I think it was funny because when he said yes, I was like, brilliant, this is happening. And then I didn't really believe it. And then I got a letter in the post, like, confirming my, like, acceptance to the school. And it had, like, Lance Storm's business card in it. And that was the moment I was like, this is legit. This is happening, which was really exciting. And then, you know, there were several months before I actually went. And definitely a few times I was like, what am I doing? This is like, I'm going to travel halfway across the world. What if, like, in my first week I absolutely hate it and my body's like, no. Like, I don't know what's going to happen, but life's a big adventure and you only get to do it once. I'm a strong believer in that, and I think you have to take these opportunities, chances, risks, whatever you want to call them sometimes, because, like, I think you should only ever regret the things you don't do. So just go do things.
I want to talk more about your time with Lance Storm in just a moment, but we have another match to add to your DVD. Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker from WrestleMania 25 is on there. What is your second match for the DVD, Rhea?
Yeah, well, so it's a different match. Good, because we don't want the same match three times. That's good to know. That would be weird. Yeah, no, so the second match I went for, we're jumping 10 years into the future from now, 10 years from Undertaker Shawn Michaels. 2019, the venue is the Resistance Gallery in London. And it's another match that I had one of my favourite experiences watching, and I got to watch close up. So basically, I suffered... two injuries. I went without injury. I was doing pretty good for quite a long time. Then I had a horrible ankle injury, came back, then I had a horrible knee injury. Terrible. Heartbreaking. However, what was great was I got to sit at ringside for a lot of Pro Wrestling Eve shows. And one of these shows, which was in March 2019, I can't remember the name of the show.
She Slams on Saturdays.
She Slams on Saturday. Look at you. I feel like you might be Googling stuff while
I'm here. No, it's all off the top of my head. It's all off the top of my head. What are you talking about?
Filling in the gaps. Was a very exciting match. It was a Pure J title match and the international retirement match for Kamam Bolshoi as she defended her title against Leon.
Now, with before we get into this match, let's talk a little bit about the ankle injury that happened. Can we talk about it? Are we all right to talk about it?
Oh, yeah, no, yeah.
Is there enough water under the bridge?
What happened? It's one of those things. Why do you not? You never get injured doing something cool, do you? Like, is it? So I was having a match. Sammy, Jane, and I were having a bit of a feud for the Eve title. I was the champion. Sammy comes down first, waiting in the ring for me. I come down, and then I'm standing on the front of the ring, and I just, you know, hold the belt up as you do, champ. Hello, and Sammy comes running from behind, smacks into me, causing me to fall off the apron and break my ankle straight on the floor. So what's difficult about the shows at Eve, the audience is right up against the ring, so you don't have this sort of clear path to the floor that you might have if there was, you know, a barricade and an area there. And unfortunately, I just came down really badly and just landed in a gross way. And that was that. And that was before the bell even rang. And yes, I did do the whole match. So, good times.
This match was... This is one that I've seen a few times. And if I'm right in thinking, this is it's a no DQ match. It's you and Sami Jay. It's you and Sami Jay. Yes. This is the night where you use Kota Ibushi as a weapon.
True story, yes.
This is phenomenal. And what's amazing is to hear this story now. And to know that to watch that match, you wouldn't know that you were working injured.
Which, you know, I'm really happy about. I'm very happy that you can't tell. What happened? You know, that happened, and literally as soon as it happened, I went, I don't think I can put weight on my foot. And I was like, this whole match. But Sammy was in the ring. Like, she'd come out and, like, lifted the title off me and was posing in the ring with it. So I had no way to communicate with her. She was really far away. And I was like, I don't think I can stand up. I don't know what to do here. And then she came out. She picked me up, threw me into the ring to, like, start the match. And I was like, oh, okay. So I can put a little bit of weight on this. That's not so bad. So I was like, okay. You know, I think a lot of adrenaline was happening there, and plus, like, my boot was, like, on quite tight, so I think it was holding, like, everything together. This is all I can surmise, because I have no idea how I got through that. And I take a triple dive on the outside. Like, there's a point, Sammy comes out, she dives on me, gets back in, dives on, and, like, when someone does that, they are trusting you with your body. You have to get up. So, you know, you just find a way. And as you said, yeah, later, I run up the stairs of the resistance gallery and bring Kota Ibushi back down to punch Sammy in the face. So, you know, there was a lot going on in that match. And I love the match dearly, which is great, because obviously it was a really horrible break that I had afterwards. Yeah, I totally, like, broke my ankle. I had bruising on the leg bone, and it was really nice because the surgeon I spoke to told me it's the hardest bone to break in your ankle, but I did it. Yeah.
Congratulations.
So, you know, that was good.
Before we move on and move back to the match itself, how much did you spoke to Ibushi about the spot?
Oh, not much.
No.
So we'd done a show the night before, and it was a lot of fun, and really, you know, enjoyed watching, and we chatted a little bit. And then I literally just got this idea in my head, and we're like, we should totally use Kota Ibushi as a weapon. And, like, we talked it through, and I was like, brilliant, yeah, let's do it. And then I kind of just went it was an XWA show, and I went to Dan Reed and was like, Dan, if I was going to use Kota as a weapon, do you think it would be okay? And he went, well, go ask him. And I went, all right. So I literally did. I went up and sort of tried to explain to him what I wanted to do, and yeah, his main concern was like, oh, but I won't have been out for my match yet. Is it okay? And I went, yeah, Dan, okay. And he was like, okay. And that was it. It was as simple as that. So, yeah, I just didn't know when it was happening or what exactly was going on, but he just knew I was going to come get him and he had to hit her. But, you know, he's great. He's up for anything. And you know, if he's not sure, you can just bribe him with ice cream because he loves ice cream.
Any particular flavor?
You know, I never got that far. But, you know, the promise of ice cream of any kind seemed to be enough. So
so let's spin on a little bit. You've got through this match with Sami Zayn. You can watch bits of the match on YouTube, by the way, and I highly recommend that you do so. It's wonderful. And it just blows my mind that you wrestled that with a broken ankle. It's stunning.
Go watch that match now and find out that I had a broken ankle. I was on full bed rest. I wasn't even allowed to walk with crutches or a boot or anything for a month afterwards. So, yeah, go wash it back. And then
she's watching you bomb up the stairs with a broken ankle.
I know.
It's incredible.
There's this moment, and you like, I always remember going, oh, God, I have to go up the stairs. And I think, like, my brain was just like, just get it done.
Yeah.
So I was just like, go.
The power of mental strength at points like that is phenomenal. But
Or stupidity, stubbornness,
stupidity.
Whatever you want to call it.
Maybe is the word. But a few months along, so you're resting up now. But as you say, you get to be a part of Pro Wrestling Eve shows. And I want to talk a bit more about Pro Wrestling Eve a bit later on, but I want to talk about this match in particular. So of all the matches that you got to watch whilst you were rehabbing, why does this Pure J Openweight match stand out to you?
It completely blew my mind. I think... You know, I've been so lucky to be a part of, like, women's wrestling in this country for 10 years now. And, you know, I've seen so many great talents wrestle, and I've seen them do many matches. And so it's still always exciting. But there's something extra exciting about seeing someone someone you haven't seen before. And, you know, I'd seen videos of Bolshoi, you know, she had been wrestling for almost 30 years. So, you know, there's a lot of material out there if you ever want to go check her out. But I'd never seen her live. And, you know, what was really exciting about this, it was, you know, it was a Pure J title match. They'd, you know, signed a contract to permit this match to happen outside of Japan. It was going to be the last chance to see Bolshoi outside of Japan as well. It was very exciting. And the matchup of these two was particularly exciting because, you know, they've wrestled each other a lot of times. They were also tag team partners and tag team champions in Japan as well. So they know each other really, really well. And I just think that can be really exciting. And it just, in the sort of build up to this show, I just saw so many fans being so excited about seeing these two wrestle that I think, you know, I fully just jumped on that hype train, and I was really excited going into it, and it did not disappoint. It was probably like my match of the year for 2019, and just to be able to see it that close, and like, they got me. There's a photo somewhere that a fan posted it, and like, I shared it, and it's I was sat beside Emily Reed, the former ring announcer for Eve, and the two of us, like, our faces are just full of joy and excitement, and we're just like, wow. And it just made me feel like a fan. Like, I wasn't like watching this and you know, critiquing her or going, oh, that was a nice spot, or, you know, whatever. I was just completely turned into a fan when I watched these two wrestle.
There's no greater moment when you could watch something like that. And even when you've worked in the business and you're a bit more hypercritical than you were, when two people can just have you lose the disbelief in a moment like that. And a match like that is just stunning. Was that your first time seeing Bolshoi and Leon live?
Yes, it was.
But you were aware of their work previously?
So I'd seen a lot of stuff, like some matches and clips of matches on YouTube and things like that, but I'd never seen them live. So this is the first time I got to see them, and I think, you know, there's a lot of fantastic talent. We don't need to, like, explain that to anyone, but there's a lot of fantastic talent in Japan. And, you know... their style of wrestling, you know, is slightly different, and it has a different energy to it, and I think that's just, it's just really exciting sort of to almost like have that like bit of culture like from another country come and just be right in front of you. Is it's extremely special. And I think as well, like, I have moments like that where I go, I mean, I know I made myself sound really old, but I get really excited. I'm like, these are two wrestlers from Japan wrestling in the UK, like right in front of me. I'm like, how cool is that? Like, I think like sometimes I think we don't appreciate how amazing it is that we can just have that happen. I mean, especially right now, we definitely can't have things like that happen. So I think once they can happen again, I think we might have that sort of little, for a little while, we'll have that buzz of appreciation that that can happen again.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Tell me something that you learned from your very first day with Lance Storm.
Wrestling's really hard.
Yeah, that seems to be the common answer as well.
So, like, just, you know, I dipped my toe in and done a couple of training, little bits of training with FWA when I was a teenager, but, like, nothing, like, ongoing or anything like that. So I had sort of this memory in my head of, like, oh, it's challenging, but, you know, I'm going to be able to do this. It's great. That first week was so tough, and I couldn't take a bump. So, like, falling backwards, just for some reason I just couldn't get it clean, and I was just like I had to drill it over and over and over and over and over, and I just went, if I can't even get this basic thing, like, how am I gonna ever be able to do anything? Luckily I got there, but yeah, just that, yeah, wrestling is hard. And what's really interesting, in that first week people dropped out of training. And, you know, these were people that had traveled across the world, and they just were like, nah, I'm good. So it was really, I think it was, you know, it was quite eye opening. I mean, the whole time I was there, so I fractured some ribs while I was training as well. And I only took, because it was like this opportunity where I was like, this is like once in a lifetime, you know, you get to do something like this. So, you know, I only took a few days off. Again, you know, is that mental strength or stupidity, we don't know, but like at the end of that, Lance was like, you know, if anything, you've proved that you're tough enough for this business, and that meant a lot to me. I was like, yay.
Was there any advice, away from obviously pointing out how tough you are, was there any advice that Lance Storm gave you that has stayed with you?
Absolutely. I think Lance is such a giving human being, and one of the things that was really tough, like, we sat and had a conversation one day about, like, all the people he's lost in wrestling, all of his friends that he's lost, and I think it's really important, like, you know, don't take people for granted, because you don't know, like, when they're going to be gone. And that's a really heavy sort of piece of advice, but it's true. And I think, you know, that really did stick with me, you know, when he could sit and list person after person, and, you know, they're not that much older than I am now, some of them, and to think, you know, and it, yeah, a lot of that, you know, was because of drug use and steroids and all the kind of things that sort of wrestling in some ways has moved away from. It's a big lesson, but I think it's an important one, is appreciate people now, because, you know, we always see these beautiful outpourings for people, you know, when they pass away, but they can't hear them, and to hear them when they're alive is really amazing to know how much you're appreciated by other people. So yeah, always tell people that you love them.
Do you feel like you do that more since the conversation with Lance Storm? Sort of, how has your outlook changed since that conversation with Lance?
Yeah, I think definitely I guess no one had really, you know, everyone experiences loss in their life. And, you know, I'd had like, maybe like a grandparent pass away or whatever, but I'd never really thought about, like, I hadn't experienced like a friend passing away. And I just sort of, you never think about those things when you're young, because you think you're invincible, and you think that, you know, nothing can touch you. And so I think that really did sort of solidify to me that like, you know, you need to appreciate every day, because you never know what's going to happen in life. And it was something, you know, I kind of had an ethos of before, but I certainly cemented it when I was out there, because I got a tattoo while I was out there, and it's a lyric by Hatebreed, and it's sort of not about like, you know, loving everybody, which I think is super important, put out those positive vibes, but it was also about appreciating every day and thinking about what you do with your days. So I have tattooed on my forearm, if you don't live for something, you'll die for nothing. And which, you know, heavy. And I've had people come up to me and literally grab my arm and be like, I disagree. And I'm like, okay, cool. Don't get it tattooed on your body. fine. I just think that whole trip, in fact, just made me go, like, you need to appreciate life and appreciate, like, every sort of day that you get. And sometimes you appreciate that day as you sit on the sofa watching movies and having a chill day all day. It's not about going out and saving the world every day, but it's just going, like, you know, don't waste your time, because you don't know what time you have.
On to Pro Wrestling Eve. How did you meet Dan and Emily Reed?
Good question. I believe we originally met because so I was training at school in London like once a week, and I was the only like regular female trainee. There were other women that came and went, but I was training there, and I saw an ad or a post on some wrestling forum somewhere for like an all women's training day. Then I got really excited, because I didn't really know any like women wrestlers and stuff. So I saw that and went, yes, I'm going. And that ended up being like a essentially sort of like a Eve training day, though it wasn't Eve. Well, I don't think they called it Eve training. I don't think it was Eve, but we did a training day, and I was just so excited. I got to train with a room of women. I was like, oh my goodness, what? So it was really, really exciting. And then, not too long after that, I got Dan Reed got in contact with me and was like, hey, do you want to be on the first Eve show? And I was like, what? I'm not ready, but yes, let's do it. And yeah, the rest is history.
How important is Pro Wrestling Eve?
I personally think it's hugely important. I think it was extremely important, especially 10 years ago, because I just feel like there just wasn't representation of women wrestling in Europe for sure. There were some promotions that were really, you know, did promote women's wrestling and were, you know, happy to have it. But more often than not, it was there as like a gimmick match, or, you know, they wanted them to do like be really hot, or they wanted them to just do a bunch of cartwheels and stuff. Like, it wasn't seen in the same way. And so to have a platform where you weren't just the women's match is really exciting, because it opens you up to so many more possibilities. I think when you're the only women's match on a show, you feel like you're representing all of women's wrestling, which is, you know, the pressure one person should have, or two people should have. But when you have a show where it's all women, then you can be the like technical one, you can be the high flyer, you can be the comedian, you can, you know, you can be whatever you want instead of just having to fit this like one niche match. So I think it, for that reason, you know, it's been a really important platform. And I think for a long time, there wasn't like a belt or an accolade within wrestling for women to really strive towards. There wasn't like, I want to be that champion. And so I think, you know, when Eve started up and created its championship, it filled that, and it gave you somewhere to work towards, which was really, really exciting.
So the first show for Eve was back on the 5th of... Is it the 5th of August?
10th of May. No, 8th of May.
The 8th of May, that was it. Now,
8th of May, yes, 2010.
In the same month, WWE had a pay-per-view in which the combined minutage of women's action was 5 minutes and 3 seconds.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. In the same month as the debut show of Pro Wrestling Eve, WWE hosted Over the Limit. The only women's match on the show was Eve Torres versus Maryse for the Divas Championship. It was 5 minutes and 3 seconds. So
5-star classic.
Absolutely.
Actually, I don't know. I have no idea. I don't remember the match. It might have been a great 5-minute match, but I bet you that's 5 minutes and 3 seconds, including entrances.
I would imagine it probably was. It wouldn't surprise me. But so the point I'm making with that is that, like, that's only 10 years ago. Was there trepidation from Dan and Emily Reed bringing in an all women's product into a mainstream medium that didn't really fully buy into women's wrestling yet?
I couldn't tell you. You'd need to ask them. I know that Dan had previously run, he ran shows called Check Fight, which were also all women's wrestling cards. So it wasn't the first time he dipped in his toes into that area. And for me, I don't think I ever really thought about it that way. I just went, which is really naive. I don't think I was nervous about it at all. I just went, oh my God, I'm going to get to like meet all these women wrestlers and then I'm going to be one. So I don't think I was nervous about it at all. I think I was just so nervous about having like my debut match. I wasn't thinking about like how the crowd would react, if anyone would turn up, like any of those things. I think, yeah. And then the first show was such a success, I never thought about it again.
You're at a point now with Pro Wrestling Eve. You were on the first show for Pro Wrestling Eve, as you say. We are we are 300 plus days into your reign as Eve champion. You're also a big part of the Eve Academy, aren't you?
Yes, I am indeed. Yeah, so I helped set up the Eve Academy in 2018, and I'm one of the trainers, coaches there at the school.
What's been the greatest satisfaction from running the or being part of the Eve Academy?
It's really interesting. So obviously, like, you know, set up, we're like, yeah, we're going to train people to be wrestlers. But what's actually been the most rewarding and amazing thing is just seeing trainees grow as people, like seeing them like walk out with their heads lifted a little bit higher and feeling a little bit more confident and just knowing that they're like total badasses, which is really cool. I think, you know, especially, you know, it's not exclusive to women, but especially for women, a lot of the time they're told to be small and to be quiet, you know, don't take up space. And wrestling is all about taking up space and being loud and doing things that you wouldn't normally get to do in your everyday life, you know. And that's not just like, you know, doing moves and stuff like that. The amount of people that come in and like do a forward roll for the first time in like 20 years and they're like, oh my goodness, I haven't done this in so long, and just reminding yourself that getting out of your comfort zone can be good and free and can be exciting, and it, you know, can help you grow as a human. Those are the things that have been really, really special.
Obviously at the moment, a big part of what has been discussed in wrestling is the speaking out movement. And yeah, it'd be remiss if we didn't touch on that today. Mm-hmm. And You spoke a few times, you spoke online about the incident. I think the quote that I take from you, which stays with me, is where you say, this isn't just about kicking out bad apples. This is about changing the mentality of the wrestling industry as a whole. For yourself, what has been your experience? And you don't have to go into details of incidents or anything like that. I'm just intrigued to know, sort of, since the speaking out movement started, what have you sort of learned about the industry?
Well, I think, like, you know, it's you know, no secret that wrestling's sort of been an inverted commas a boys' club for a long time. And I think one of the things that was hard for some of us that have been around for longer is kind of, you know, at first we were like kicking ourselves and being like, why haven't we done something about this before? And then we in that same breath realized like it's because we didn't feel like we could. And, you know, it's been a really brave moment that this has happened, and you know, it is long overdue. It's in this weird way where I think, you know, people are so shocked and surprised, but like it's happened in all the rest of the entertainment industry. It was probably something that was going to happen. I don't think maybe we realized quite on the scale of things that were going on, but you know, I it's not a surprise that something was going on. Anywhere where there can be that abusive power, then there's a propensity for something like this to happen. It's a lot of work, like it changing how things are and making wrestling a better place. It's a marathon, it's not a sprint. And I think like what is really difficult is everyone just wants these like quick fixes right now. Like, what are you gonna do right now to fix things? And yes, there are some things that can be quickly implemented to make change, but to make lasting change is going to take time. So you know, I have been speaking to Equity a lot, along with some other wrestlers, about things that, you know, they're a performers union, for people that don't know. And you know, most, you know, they used to just like be an actors union, but now they you know, cover all sorts of performers. And you know, we've been having some conversations with them about like what, you know, what we can do, and there are a lot of people out there have different projects going on to try and make the industry better. But I think it's, you know, lots of people have said like wrestling is based pretty much like the Wild West. There is no law, like there is no regulation. And when I tell people outside of wrestling this, they're always so shocked. They're like, what do you mean? And I'm like, yeah. So it's the wake up call the industry needed. And I think things, you know, things have to change, things will change. It's not going to be easy. But I think there's enough people in wrestling that care about wrestling enough to fight for it. I believe that it's worth fighting for, and I think a lot of other wrestlers do too.
What would you like to see happen? Because obviously you say there's a lot of people who want short-term fixes, and really the solution is long-term. We see a lot of companies now who have basically said, we're not coming back until either this next year or until this is in a healthier place. What would you personally like to see happen to stop something like the speaking out movement from happening again?
Well, I think like one thing we have to be realistic about is like you can't eradicate this kind of behavior. It's always going to exist, but what you can do is make sure that you are creating an environment where it's not acceptable, where and you make it as hard as possible for that to happen. I think, you know, promotions need to get on board with having sort of better conditions for wrestlers. You know, we need to have safeguarding policies in place. There needs to be ways to make a complaint if you need to. You know, they're just little things that need to change. And I think there are things that, you know, wrestlers have to agree to as a community, and that's what's really challenging, because we're all these like independent little units, and we still are as we try to fix this. And until we all come together, that's when we're going to get like a really good solution. Whether we need some kind of like regulatory body, something like that, you know, that is something that there's a lot of discussion about. Again, that's something that takes a long time to happen. I know that some women were able to have a conversation with some MPs before Parliament closed for the summer, which is really important because you need that buy-in if you're going to get a regulatory body and things like that. So I think there's a lot of exciting things happening, and I just think like the important thing is that like we start to talk about some of the changes that we want to make before shows come back, and we know that's probably not too potentially not too far away. And then I think the other big thing is like changing the mentality of wrestling. It comes from the schools, and so I think it's really important that you know, training schools are harboring the right environment and providing the right information to trainees, because they are the future of the business. And if you reflect that a certain behavior is okay or not okay, then they're going to think that way. And so for us to sort of perpetuate what is right and wrong in wrestling from the training school, that should lead to the next generation of wrestling being in a lot better place.
Is there anything in particular with the Eve Academy that you would like to see brought in for the trainees?
I think what's been really interesting, I had like a Zoom call with a bunch of the trainees just a couple of weeks ago, and Eve Academy by no means is perfect, but what was really nice to hear was a lot of them were like, we believe that the trainees were saying this, that they believe that Eve Academy is part of the solution and not the problem, which was really nice. And I think a lot of them had said, you know, we didn't really like, we've always really loved the school and loved training here, but we didn't appreciate how good we had or lucky we were until we started hearing about all these things happening at other schools. And that was really nice to hear. But again, there's things like we definitely need to work on, we want to make sure, you know, we have those safeguarding policies in place, that we do have like a complaints procedure if people do have concerns and they don't feel like they can come to us for any reason, and having that code of conduct. I think having an official code of conduct in place is going to be important now, but I like to think that, you know, myself and Greg Burridge, who, you know, I teach with, are really instilling the values we would want to see in wrestling in the trainees already, maybe just not quite in such an official way. But I think, you know, it is going to be important to have that stuff out there now. Just like, it is funny, like we've always just come into wrestling and like sort of treated it this way because it's always the way it's been. But if you went into any other like sport or, you know, entertainment, you would have all these like onboarding processes and like guidelines and handbooks and things like that. And wrestling just has never been that way, so we haven't done it. And but it's time to change.
Absolutely, it absolutely is. And it's been incredible to hear so many stories and to see change already starting to happen. I feel like it won't happen overnight, but it's great to see those uncomfortable conversations happening.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, and it is that like, it's a double-edged sword. You know, it is horrible and was horrible, especially when those stories were coming out thick and fast. But at the same time, it was a really great thing because putting that all out in the open meant that we were in a position to really go, okay, we need to make change. So, you know, there's I said this quote on another podcast that I did sort of about mental health and wrestling, but it's something I still can't remember who said it, but like I love this, like even like the worst day has the best moment. And I think that like that is really like applicable in this time. You know, these awful things have been happening, and having it all come out into the open is really hard, and it was really difficult. And I think we're all still really reeling from it and dealing with it, but change will happen as a result of it. So yeah.
As well as taking with you three wrestling matches, I like to spring this on people, Rhea.
Oh no.
You're also, I also like you to take with you a movie, an album, and a luxury item.
So when
I say to you, you can take a movie with you, what's sort of one of the first movies that springs to mind with you?
Fight Club.
Excellent. Can't talk about
it. I love Fight Club. And I don't know if it's the right movie to take. No, it is. It's great. I was like, is this a movie I'm going to want to watch a million times? Yeah, it is. Of course it is. I remember seeing the trailer for Fight Club at the cinema, and I like was immediately like, I have to see this film. I have to see this film. This looks so amazing. I'm so excited. I've never seen anything like it. I was like, but I wasn't old enough to go see it when it came out. But my mum was, and she went and told me how brilliant it was. and all her friends told me how brilliant it was. I was like, oh, great. And I like waited and waited and waited for that to come out in home release. And back then it was like a year before things came out. It was so long. And a minute came out. I was like, you have to go buy this for me. I have to see it. I have to watch it. And then I finally saw it, and it did not disappoint. Like, it's just, I absolutely loved the story, and the acting's amazing. The soundtrack's phenomenal. David Fincher is controversial. Is one of my favorite directors. Just everything about it. It just hit at the right moment for me too. And I love it so much.
What about an album?
Ooh, I think I'm going to go with, it's so tricky because, like, you know, music and your mood goes together and you want to listen to different things at different times. But I'm going to go with a classic. It was 20th anniversary this year, is Papa Roach Infest. I'm a huge Papa Roach fan through and through. People are like, they still exist. And I'm like, yeah, they do. And yeah, they still bring out albums. And yeah, they are still absolutely amazing live. And in fact, that is the way you should experience them. Don't listen to them at home. Go see them at a gig. The energy is insane. It's brilliant. Listening to that album, I absolutely love that album. And also it will bring back all the memories of all the gigs I've been to too.
Which, where was the gig that you saw Papa Roach at?
Oh, I mean, I've seen them close to 20 times. So.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I've seen them a lot. The first time I saw them was in Dublin in Ireland, and my parents drove me down from Belfast and like dropped me at the venue and were like, see you in a few hours. And then to like find them in the car park afterwards, it was great. But it like such an amazing, I was like, this is the best thing ever. One of the most special times, I got to see them at a really small venue in Kingston twice in one day. So that was really, really cool. And the lead singer said that my hair was cool. So, yeah, that made me happy.
There's never a point where you don't get that buzz when somebody like that acknowledges you.
No, I know. It's what was really funny as well is like, so I was still, I had my knee injury at that point, and I am a down the front of the gig causing chaos kind of person, and I couldn't because of my knee. And so we were like, me and my friend were like at the back on this, like, it wasn't like it was in this like weird club bit. So there was like a little platform was like, let's get on there, then we'll have a really good view, it'll be great. And so like, actually, if I hadn't been back there, he would never have like shouted out at me. So all worked out in the end.
And how about a luxury item, Ria?
Oh, this is the trickiest one. Like, you can have so many, like, luxury item. It could be anything. How dare you surprise me with having to pick a luxury item. You know what? I'm going to pick, I have this print. It's on my bedside, actually. And it's by an artist called Wero. And I absolutely love it. And I have it there because it's like this girl, she's on a scooter and she's pulling like a little truck, and it's got all of, it's been like her imagination has exploded out the back of this thing. And I absolutely love it. It makes me really happy and sort of reminds you that like your imagination is limitless and you can go out and achieve anything. So maybe I would bring that with me to keep me inspired and motivated for how the heck to get off this desert island once I get bored of watching these three matches.
When did you discover that picture?
Well, so I discovered Wero through, he does this thing, Tiny Stories, but it was through the Hit Record Project, which is this thing that Joseph Gordon-Levitt runs. It's all about like people contributing to each other's art and doing really cool things, and they made a TV series, they made a couple books, like they do illustration and music and film and animation and all sorts of things, and it's all these really cool collaborative projects. And you know, it's for people to get involved in, or you can just be an observer and watch these things sort of come to life, and it's really, really cool. And Wero was one of the artists that like really got involved in that when I was like kind of exploring the platform a lot. And I just followed them into like social media, and I saw this, he posted it on Instagram, and I just went, that's so beautiful. And yeah, and then it came into my life and it was mine forever.
Food on this island though, so I hope there's like, apart from the person I've already eaten.
Got one more match for you, for you, Rhea. So we've had Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker from WrestleMania. Mm-hmm. We have had a belter from Pro Wrestling Eve. What is your third and final match?
So for my third and final match, whether it's egotistical or not, I went for one of my own matches.
You are the second person in Desert Island Graps history to go for their own match. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Just you and James Storm on this particular part of the island.
Well, I'm in good company. The reason I picked this match is just because it was a really special moment for me. Like, you were asking about moments in the ring. It was a really special moment for me. And so I think when I would watch it back, it would just make me feel like really good, and I would be able to look back at it and go, that was an amazing moment. And it was an amazing moment for fans too. So the third match I have selected is from last year as well. So another 2019 match. It was from the She Won tournament. And it was myself versus Jetta.
Now, why this one in particular from She Won?
This match is very special for a lot of reasons. I had my first ever trainee show match with Jetta. Jetta was around in Eve when I started at Eve, and has sort of been, you know, been a part of my wrestling journey throughout. So, you know, I have a very special bond with her. I respect her a huge amount, and I think she's an amazing performer that sometimes gets underlooked, and I don't understand why, because I think she's one of the best sort of in British wrestling, you know. So the match was really special though, because there was a whole build up to this match. So the She Won tournament is a little bit like the G1 in Japan, and if that still doesn't make any sense to you, basically it's a points based tournament, and you have to get the people with the most points go through to the final. There we go. So this was Jetta's third year in the She Won. The first year she got no points, the second year she got one whole point, and this year she was on 0 points going into this match. It was her last match in the tournament, her last chance to score any points, and everyone just wanted her to get 2 points, and to do that she would have to beat me. So that was the setup for this match. Also, everybody hates me and I'm the champion. There we go. Everybody loves Jetta, wants her to get these 2 points, and everyone hates me. The weekend's been very energetic. It's been really exciting. We've had Jazz in the tournament. It's been very cool. So we get to this match, and we're like, okay, it's a bit big pressure to like deliver on this exciting match where Jetta may or may not get 2 points. But we get down to the ring. Very embarrassingly, my dad is wearing a Jetta t-shirt, which of course she points out to me. She was like, everyone hates you, even your dad's wearing my shirt. Which it resulted in a Rhea's dad chant, which was frustrating and hilarious at the same time. So, you know, there was a lot of build-up going into this match. And it was very, very exciting. We got going, we were having a good fight. She decided to punch me in the tit and then did a 10 tit punch count. That was a traumatizing experience for me. I don't know why I've included that part of the match, but I guess if I have to have all of it, I have to have that bit. She did legitimately go, you know, these punches, they're gonna hurt. So I was like, okay, here we go. But I absolutely love this match. I feel like I'm just going to spoil it. I'm just going to spoil it.
Don't worry about it.
If you're going to watch it, you're going to watch it. But there are two specifically special moments in this match. One is, you know, the action spills out into the outside. I'm a bit of a brawler. I like being on the outside. However, in this instance, I do not. Jetta grabbed a can from a fan and started smashing it into my knee. Bam, 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 bam. And I'm like,
get off me, stop, roll back into the ring. I'm holding my knee. The ref's there. Jetta, get back in the ring. She's coming for me. And then she sees it not getting up. So then she stops. And then the ref stops. And then the whole crowd stops. I'm crying in that ring. You could hear a pin drop. And it's just this really emotional moment. And then the referee and Jetta start trying to help me get up to my feet. And I'm struggling. You can see I'm struggling. And then I hit a T-bone suplex and bam, Jetta, screw you. You have to swerve. And then I started, it was brilliant. And I think it was really, really special. And it was a really difficult call on the weekend because there had been a few legitimate injuries that weekend. And it was like, oh, is this going to be bad taste? And I said, everyone hates Rhea O'Reilly. It's even better if we do this spot. And that injury angle was just, it was so sweet. We hooked everybody in. We didn't tell anyone. Maybe we told, I think, like three people. So no one knew. And people thought it was legit. And that is chef's kiss beautiful when you can get people like that. They hated me in that moment. And it was glorious. Anyway. The match continues. We keep going on. We get down to that last minute. I am delivering multiple curb stomps to Jetta. She is not having a good time. I put her into a submission. I'm holding. We're getting to those last few seconds. I'm getting annoyed because if I don't beat her, she's going to get 1 point. And I don't want that. And that really, really sucks. So I'm doing everything I can. Just smashing her face into the floor. I'm like, come on. And then in the last few seconds, she rolls me up. 1, 2, 3. Boom. Done. What? With literally seconds to spare. And the resistance gallery goes crazy. Like, I have never heard a pop like that in that venue ever. And it was funny. The guy who does the bar at the venue literally came up later and went, I have never heard this venue that loud. And they were just so stoked for her to get those 2 points. And it was just like a really special moment to have. And the fact that I got to share it with her and that we managed to like work that crowd so well was just really, really special.
What I love is the passion that you guys had in putting that match together. It resonates even now, like in the way that you tell that story. I can't see you and the people listening can't see you, but you can tell how animated you are in talking about it again. This is what we talk about when wrestling is brilliant and wrestling gets you, especially when you're now in on the fix, if you were. And that what I love is when you hear that and you can still hear how beautifully it resonates with you.
Yeah. Yeah, it was just really special. And the fact that we did it, we were like, yes, we got him. And it was so good. And like, and that's what's great is those are the moments that I wrestle for. Because like what I love so much about wrestling is being able to make people forget about whatever's going on in their lives for you know, even just a few minutes, for that time that I'm in the ring. And when you have that, like, no one's thinking about like the bills they got to pay or the job they get or the like relationship is breaking down or anything else that could be going on in their life. In those moments, you're in those moments. And I think to be able to do that for someone is really, really special. And so like, that's why things like that are so important to me.
Two questions before you go. Number one, what is the best way to enjoy a hexaflexagon?
Oh my goodness, yes. Everyone needs to get on YouTube and just type in hexaflexagon. Your life will be changed forever. I don't want to spoil it more than that. I do have a t-shirt all about hexaflexagons. I'll try and post a picture soon.
Please do. And where can people find out all about you, Rhea?
I am most active on Twitter, where I am at RDPixie. I had Twitter long before I was a wrestler. And was too stubborn to change my handle. So it's, at RDPixie. That's me. But if you type in Rhea O'Reilly, you'll find me. I'm on Instagram more traditionally as Rhea O'Reilly. So you can find me there too. But yeah, I'm always up for a chat and a natter. Get in touch.
Reach out and then share thoughts on hexaflexagons, among other things.
Yes, absolutely. I will talk about those. I'm also a big comic book fan, a horror movie fan. and all sorts. Yes. And I've really, do you know what, as well, during lockdown, I've rediscovered my love of like click and point adventure games.
Oh, so, which ones are you playing?
There's a game I followed for ages, and it's Luna the Shadow Moon, and it came out in February, but then like life was really busy and I didn't get to play it, and I have just been playing it recently, and it's absolutely gorgeous. And there's also a game coming out which I played the demo and the pre-story of, called Welcome to Elk, which just is a bit mental, but I'm really, really excited for it. So those are the games I've been checking out recently. But I feel like, you know, I haven't played any in like the last, I'm gonna say like 5 years. So if anyone wants to send me any recommendations of what I've missed out on, please send them my way.
Well, I, in terms of recent one, personally, I'd like to shout up to you. It's not a recent one, but it's a classic, and it's a piece of MS-DOS gold that is available on PlayStation 4's PlayStation Now. It's Day of the Tentacle.
Oh, yes. Oh, no. Yeah, you don't need to recommend that to me, my friend.
You're on it? Excellent.
Day of the Tentacle was like my gateway game when I was a kid.
I don't think I could put that in the chrono, John.
Well.
So therefore, I don't need to sell you Sam and Max then.
No, absolutely not. We're on board. But yes, I'm up for all the recommendations because I'm just flying through them now with joy. Absolutely brilliant.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
For all the wrestling headlines in just 10 minutes, search Cultaholic Wrestling News on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.